Welcome to The Great Security Debate. This show has experts taking sides to help broaden understanding of a topic. Therefore, it's safe to say that the views expressed are not necessarily those of the people we work with or for. Heck, they may not even represent our own views, as we take a position for the sake of the debate. Our website is greatsecuritydebate.net, and you can contact us via email at feedback@greatsecuritydebate.net or on Twitter @securitydebate. Now, let's join the debate already in progress.
Who should the CISO report to? And, you know, now that I've been in the security space, so if I back up and think about, you know, when we look at why do certain salespeople end up in organizational roles at the very top? Like people say, well, you know, the CEO or this gentleman came from sales, or there's always somebody from the sales side, you know, in the top of the organization. How does he make it there? And my background was engineering, but I very much always wanted to be in sales from the idea of I really like getting up and explaining things and being able to present things in kind of an organized fashion to get either a point across or be able to teach people. And I can remember volunteering when I was at Michigan State University, actually, and we would go in with AICHE, the American Institute of Chemical Engineers, go into the high schools and the middle schools to teach kids about science. And some of the stuff we would do, like we'd have to come up with creative ways to do it, right? So if I said the word to you, non-Newtonian fluid, what does that mean? Well, it's something that can have both liquid and solid character.
Oobleck, that's the word I'm looking for.
So it's the idea that like, and we would do this testing paints. So apply a high shear. So if you're in automotive and you're pumping paint through a system, right, that system applies a shear along the pipes. That shear rate could actually create friction, making the fluid be more solid versus liquid. So that way, when it hits the car, it's staying, but how fast does it go back to being liquid? So what we would do is take cornstarch and water, mix it up, and the kids would pick it up in their hand and it would run down their hand, and then you squeeze it, right? And it would become solid because you just applied pressure. Now, the point of this story isn't so much that it has anything really to do with security beyond the fact that I liked explaining things to people and demonstrating it in a way where it would resonate and stay with them. So when it comes to security and someone asks, who should the CISO report to? Well, in my humble opinion, the CISO should report directly to the board if the board has a vested interest in the business or the CEO, okay? But at some point, it needs to be the decision makers. And if you say, well, the CIO is a decision maker, does the CIO have a vested interest in the business risk, right? Like, are they accepting business risk? And what I'm backing up to is, and I've only been in my role for, let's say, about a year and a month now, right? And one thing I found, and it was the same when I was at my previous company and we would try hiring people to do sales work, but I wanted people that were engineers. I'd always say, I'm only going to hire an engineer. It was really hard to find an engineer that could also be a good salesperson. And what that meant was somebody that could get up in front and really explain and articulate and smile the entire time, right? Too many times I walk into a meeting and the person that I'm talking to in front of me sometimes could not be colder, right? Or maybe just they're not the person that's going to be able to explain to the top management from a business reason why this is important. And if I back up, when you see salespeople end up in management roles, they have spent years understanding the budgets, the milestones, the reason for hitting these things, how difficult it is to get approval or why it needs to be set at this price. And if they could come up with ideas, why management buys in and they sell their business case internally before they go out and sell the business. And being able to do that trains them over 15, 20 years of constantly selling themselves internally to be good at selling externally. So part of any role in any business is being able to sell not just yourself, but what it is you're doing, your business plan to management, and why it's part of the business structure. If you just come in and say, and I pivot back to Wiser again when they showed that most recent shark video, right? And it's like shaking the little kid, right? Like, I'm doing this for your own good, but I'm saying it in a really nice way. It reminds me of Nemo, right? And like the two sharks are, we are sharks. and we are not going to eat you, right? It's like, little kid sees a shark, what's he gonna do? So so if you walk in and just try securing the management team or scaring the management team rather than making them aware, right? I don't know, I digress a little bit, but I was just throwing that out there.
No, I think you're spot on. And this is one of the things when we were going back and forth over text that I mentioned, that a CISO that continues to shout FUD from the top of the rooftops soon finds themselves without the voice within the organization, right? It'll get shut out. And your point is spot on why salespeople are so good, because salespeople have learned to first listen, understand the pain points, understand the aspects of the business on what has to be done, and then translate that and map what the technical side, what they're trying to sell to those business objectives. And, you know, I do believe there's a lot of CISOs out there that are still too tech focused and not conversation focused and understanding the elements of the business.
Or relationship focused. If you think about it, half of the battle that the CISO has is it is as much internal as it is the world that's trying to affect change on the company, the outside world, the attackers, the evildoers, the data takers, et cetera. There's just as much internal pressure and internal friction, because people still often view security functions as inhibitors, as cost centers, as cost sinkholes, as back office functions. And those kinds of things are changing. And some organizations that, you know, that's realized. In others, the CISO's role is to go out and help them understand how security helps business. So I actually have a different answer to where does the CISO reside. I think the answer is it depends, as in many things, security. I think the CISO should report to whomever in the organization is best able to support the notion of security. In some cases, it's a very strong security-minded CIO who has the eye and the ear of the board and can help foster those. In some cases, it's the CEO, when that may not be the case with the CIO and you need someone to arbitrate and you need someone to help balance out. And in some cases, it's the board, because you also need to put that same kind of oversight and parity with the CEO. Different people in different maturities of their own security exploration as they grow as business leaders require a slightly different structure. So I don't think you can paint it with one brush and get an answer, because every organization is different. Just like every organization's, you know, human resources chart looks different than each other's, and everyone's finance chart looks different than everyone else's. I think the same holds true here. Put security under a CFO, put them under a COO, put them under a CIO, whichever person is able to take them across the finish line.
It's so spot on. And I feel like I say we, as in the security community, have done a disservice to this conversation, because we tried to do that single paint stroke brush, right? That we try to do, well, we got to find one answer that fits everything. Well, no, it doesn't work in this case. This is there's multiple variables, nuances. It's a complex conversation, because it depends on the CISO you're talking about and their verbal, their relationship skills, their technical skills, and how those map together. It depends on the people that are in the seats in the current executive team, but it also depends on the vertical of the company. And that really, you have to look at least those three pillars, and I'm sure there's others that we're not even thinking of that come into the equation to be able to figure out where the best reporting line is. And we can't really simplify it and boil it down to, well, this is the one answer that you can no longer report to the CIO. Maybe that's right in some cases. Maybe it's wrong in others. It's a much more nuanced conversation.
And I could actually see where a CEO, depending on the conversation, like you just said, if depending on how the CISO articulates himself, understands the business, if they're talking directly to the board, there's certain times where I could see a CEO could slightly be threatened, because what's being explained may look like the CEO is taking too much risk for the board's stomach. Once the board starts to understand what the CISO is saying, the CEO steps back and says, and for everyone listening, you know, if you're not in the security space, CISO refers to Chief Information Security Officer, where CIO refers to Chief Information Officer. And obviously, if you don't know the CEO and the board, We can talk about that later, but regardless, a CEO could be threatened if the board comes across as perceiving that the CEO was taking too much risk. And that's where I think across, you know, when we talk about teams, right? I thought there was a really interesting post I read the other day, right? And it talked about some of the great teams. And then it referred to who is the CISO and what is his role on the team. And it compared him to Scottie Pippen, all right? And the way they did this was they said, you know, CISOs, stop whining and crying. Understand that you are Scottie Pippen and not Michael Jordan. And it basically referenced to the fact that the CISOs, chief information security officers, complain that nobody listens. I have no money. You know, vendors aren't good. You know, blah, 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 blah. But he went on to say, understand your role on the team, that you're not the guy shooting the three-pointer at the end of the game, jumping up in the air. You're Scottie Pippen. You're the one dishing the ball off, is basically what he referenced. Your job is to remove friction and obstacles from that process to get down the floor to put the ball up. So I throw it out there then. How does that resonate with both you, Dan, and Eric?
Poorly.
Very poorly.
Oh, would you like more?
That's what we boiled it down to. Poorly.
I think there's a lack of maturity, business maturity, in that mindset. And I think it goes like this, that security, privacy, technology as a whole, you know, I'd argue there are people who still think that technology is a back office function and really is just about putting a desktop on your desk and giving you the word processor and access to email. I think we've moved on from that. Technology is even in times now, and I don't have a metric, but I've seen a few reports that even during pandemic, where is spend happening? People are cutting across the rest of their businesses in order to be able to support the technology functions that will keep their businesses alive through the course of a period in which people can't come to retail. I've seen shops, local shops, that have spun up online ordering functions very quickly. There's a jokey post that shows up on LinkedIn every few days. What was the greatest driver for your digital transformation? Your move from physical to digital and digitizing your business. And option one was the CEO. Number two was the CIO. And number three was COVID. And it really is, you know, every few days it shows back up again. But I think it reinforces the fact that technology is a huge piece of what is driving business today. And I think the lack of realization or lack of admission that that's the case within a company, they either haven't gotten there yet and they will, or they won't get there and their business will likely suffer. So having that kind of a response about the role of security in the business as a business enabler, I think mirrors that lack of maturity of what business depends on in order to be successful. We are, and increasingly security is one of those features that cannot be ignored. And if it is, it's at your own peril, as a key business driver and a key business enabler. We used to say, you won't lose a deal because you don't have security. Now we'll say, you can lose a deal because you don't have good security. And we're not far, and in some verticals, we're already seeing if security can win you the deal.
Yeah, going back to something you said, Dan, you know, I think the number one skill, and I know I've said this before, number one skill of a CISO has to be relationship building. And I think if we go to that, if we see security as just its own pillar, that it's its own, it's a cost center or, you know, back office function, like you said, Dan, then it becomes problematic. You know, one of the things that we did when we started building out the information security program is we had a video from our president that made it very clear on the role of information security and that everybody has a role in information security. It is a part of every job function. It is ingrained in every business function that we do. And I think that's the way security has to go. That it's not just, oh, we're just in the background. All right, I'm gonna pass the ball here. It is an integral part to every vertical, every pillar within the business structure, because the business that doesn't address risk can often cease to become a business or be a business in the long run.
And for those that are saying, you know, if you're upset with the fact that your company isn't taking, that the organization, the role you're a CISO for, is not taking security the way you want it, then go. Don't, if you're upset with it, make the change. This is not the world of 1950. We're not staying in jobs for 25 years. I think the average tenure of a CISO now is 18 to 24 months in a role. So switch it up, see some new things, see how other companies do it. Take that jump and go to a place where your desires are aligned with the business's desires. Now, I will agree with the person who wrote this. Don't complain about it.
Right. Or
do something about it.
Yeah. If you find yourself saying, nobody listens to me, I have no money, I think that is, there's a reflection point, right? Is it the culture of the business, or is it the way you're delivering it? Is it the way you're selling the security? Let's be honest. A lot of us, we are selling security throughout the organization. Always be closing, right? I mean, there's an element of that you are understanding, you know, Mr., Mrs., whomever role, I understand. These are your objectives. This is how I can help you meet those objectives and build some security around that. You've always got to be closing. And if you find yourself hitting that wall of, well, nobody listens to me, nobody wants to open the door and listen to me, well, you know, maybe you're shouting FUD.
Yeah.
That'll be the quickest way to close down a conversation.
And I can pivot back to my days in my previous role. The number of times I spent either A, in front of the managing officers overseas, whether it was in front of our top executives here in North America, was literally almost on a monthly basis. But again, we were managing some of the biggest teams going after $1 billion, you know, opportunities. And I can use the word B. I mean, you could take over like 2-3 different vehicles and show the number of parts that we were putting on there, right? And I can also go back and think about the first time we actually ended up having to take it wasn't even an audit. It was you go through a video and then you had to do the question and answer at the end. And you had to do that like once a year, right? That didn't come about until we actually had something happen, right? So then for everybody that had to do it, we looked at it as, oh man, the IT group failed and now I have more work to do, right? Because it was never explained why we had to do it and you had to fill this thing out. And if you didn't do it, then you got this notification, and come like month one or two after not doing it, then you were called out by the president, you know, sitting inside a meeting of, hey, you three need to go back to your laptop and take this test, right? And we couldn't understand A, why we were doing it. It was never really explained, nor was it ever explained really what happened. So when you talk from that extent, even the top management then wasn't taking it serious, right? Because, and it goes back to, I literally had a conversation this week with someone that asked, do you guys, and this is directed towards me being on the vendor space, said, do you guys offer training? And I started to go through like the type of training that we offer. And he goes, no, I was thinking more along the lines of, and he was asking this because he told me later, he goes, you just sounded very knowledgeable on many different subjects. So he goes, I wasn't sure if you guys offered training in regards to, you know, training.
We'd like to bring Brian in to train the company.
That's a scary, scary thought. But he started to explain that they do these quarterly emails, right? And in those emails, people have to go through a video. And it reminded me of the same thing that I had to do in my previous job. And he said, I don't know that anybody really even watches them anymore, right? And
well, they at least press the button and let them play in the background and then answer the questions.
So, and I immediately pivoted and said, I told my engineering group that was on the phone, I said, hey guys, earmuffs real quick. I go, have you ever heard of the company? And again, I know we bring it up a lot, but Wiser. And I pivot back to, and Eric, just what you were just saying, the ability to articulate a story to the management team, right? Let's start with if it's not the management, then how are you articulating it to the business, right? So if you can find a way to catch people's eye, if I can get my 10-year-old to watch it and understand it and like it, and I can watch it, right, as a 40-plus-year-old and watch it and understand it and like it, I'm like, this resonates, right? It was the first time I picked up on something that I literally thought was tangible that you could take and give to people and they would like it. Now, I am going to back up and say something. in regards to that conversation we were having about Pippen and Jordan. There's many organizations, and Dan, you made a great point, though, that today, what happened back in beginning of March with COVID and those that really had a online or e-commerce presence were able to get through, or let's say make that pivot faster, right? Online retail, et cetera. Those that didn't probably suffered. And security was part of that posture, played a role in that. If you pivot back to organizations that were always doing face-to-face meetings, et cetera, and just take an automotive example, guy comes back from overseas, wins a $150 million deal. Everybody celebrates him, puts him up on the pedestal. They make him Michael Jordan. Now, at the end of the day, that deal gets done because he was able to work on his laptop the entire flight over. He was able to open up different Microsoft documents, et cetera, and no macro ended up, you know, fetching, you know, launching PowerShell, fetching an Emotep and blowing things up, right? He was able to do his day-to-day job no matter where he was, online, connect through VPN. All these things behind the scenes took place in order for him to successfully be able to travel over, have meetings, present eloquently, and secure the data, right? So nobody else had it, and then win the deal. But nobody talks about that person behind the scenes. And some people might reference that person as being the Scottie Pippen.
That's the Pippen, exactly. And don't get me wrong, that function, that's table stakes. That's part of running a business. And I truly appreciate the parts of the organization that go and that are part of making those things happen. But I think it's also appreciating the visibility of security, the need that people need to know that the integrity of how those parts will be delivered, that they will be delivered genuine, that they're not going to have counterfeits along the way. You know, the electronic equivalent of that is where security organizations are stepping up to add confidentiality, integrity, and availability into the business processes and be able to inform business processes and say, if you do this, then these are the risks that'll come, and help them understand and evaluate the risk. And I think I've said this before in this venue, I say it regularly, as long as we look at it as security, it will be a very difficult sell. If you look at it as technology risk management, it's a lot easier for people to understand where the value comes in the business chain. We have the same problem with the word privacy versus the words data protection. I think that outlines and highlights the ability for people to see that the almost the value add, and you both know how much I love those two words. the value add on top of that baseline of my laptop work, on top of the Scottie Pippen work. And boy, do I feel like we're using Scottie Pippen's name wrong, because there was not possible for those Bulls to be what they were without Michael and Scottie and five other people that were there every day.
And I really wish we were talking more about the Pistons, right? And this goes back to, think about when the Pistons beat the Lakers and everyone was like, oh, Shaquille, Kobe, they're going to sweep them. It's going to be a 3-game series. What ended up happening? Two guys, two superstars, aren't the entire team. That isn't somebody coming off the bench either. And a lot of times that could be a security analyst coming off the bench. He could be, you know, the feather in the cap, comes in and he's just raining threes down. Reminds me of a guy that played at U of M when they were playing Louisville, came in off the bench. I mean, he was on fire, and then they put him back on the bench and they lost to Louisville in the championship. I mean, do you know who I was referencing there?
I was actually kind of laughing that when you switched it over to Detroit, I watched a Chicago guy cringe on the
Well, no, and what I, when you, so complete aside, it actually has something to do with security and the integrity side. Did you guys know, you remember the game NBA Jam?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So article came out recently in which the developer of NBA Jam in that game, in that matchup, made it so that the Pistons could never win.
It was so the Pistons would win. They always had
that's right.
Yeah, he was from Detroit. He was a Detroit guy.
That's right. One, I sunk way too many quarters into that game. Two, I had that matchup fail on me regularly. But the code was, the code was developed so that there was an artificially high chance that the Lakers would lose in that matchup.
And what was really important, though, in that gentleman, what he doesn't explain, though, was that what he was trying to emphasize to everybody was that teamwork prevails. And I'm making that part up. But the reality is most people thought these two superstars would take down Detroit. But at that time, I mean, you look at the team of five that were out there playing, and it even reminds me back to the Bad Boys. They were, when they were playing good together and they were playing in as a team, they were pretty unstoppable. But then what happened? Then the next year, they make it all the way to the championship and they're playing San Antonio. And San Antonio became the team that epitomized teamwork, right? They played very, very, very well together, right? There was no, at least in those first few years too, there was no selfishness when it came to holding the basketball. So pivoting that back then, and that way we're not just talking about Scottie Pippen, but actually the Bulls or the Pistons. I think that's where good teamwork comes in. And I think the CISO's role, just like everybody else's role, is part of that entire team, right? You're part of that top team making top tier decisions.
Right. I'm Dan Patrick. That's Keith Olbermann, Kenny Mayne. We'll be right back. Sports Center.
Yeah, no, it's interesting. You talk about the teamwork. I'm actually, I'd be interested what you guys think. As I look at organizations, I actually think the security team is in a unique position and is usually one of the most close-knit teams within an organization. You know, as I think about this, that the security team, especially as you get into the SOC and the analysts and all of that, are so used to being under fire, having to quickly pivot and be agile and react to things, that you have some of your most close-knit people. So you talk about Brian coming off the bench and being able to offer more to the organization. I wholeheartedly agree and see that a lot out of the security organization. You know, is it taking it to the armed forces side, the way I've always kind of explained it to my team, that we're not going to be the Army, we're not going to be the ones running the war. But if you look at like the Navy SEALs, right, they come in highly tactical, that they can take care of a situation, get in, get out, and move on. That's the way I see kind of information security teams playing within the organization, being able to be laser focused, cool under fire, being able to make things work in a quick fashion. I look at incidents that have happened that have been purely maybe on the infrastructure side, business process side. I think some of the best solutions have actually come out of the security team that is able to keep emotions in check, that under fire, really able to perform well and provide the Michael Jordan type star to win the game.
So it's funny you brought up the Navy SEALs, because I know we talked about extreme ownership before, but using that then, what is the highest number of people that somebody can manage effectively when under fire?
Oh, that's a good question. There's actually a correct answer to this, and I forget the term, because it also gets into how many people you can effectively, like actual friends you can actually have. Like, and there's been a lot of research done around this.
The answer in the Navy SEALs is six. That when everything hits the fan and bullets are raining down on you, the highest number of people that somebody can command and bring, I won't use the word bring home alive, but command effectively is six. And Leif Babin and the guys use that when they go in and consult with companies. And it's always funny to hear like their first comparative of how they're going to draw that storyline of where they get to that number and then where they show that to management. But you can effectively have six. And they said the ability to fragment, managerial fragmentation, or fragment, you know, all the way up is really, really important. But that's where also trust comes in. And you have to trust the junior leaders. You have to trust then the people below the junior leaders. And then if everybody's effectively making decisions and you trust they're going to make the right decision, then he can lead six people. And then this person can lead six teams. And then this person can lead six groups, right? And so far up the chain. And sometimes they go in and see where one guy's managing 22 people and one guy's managing three people. And they would ask the question, why is that? Well, he's better at managing people. And they're more specified on two projects we have them working on. Do you think that person effectively manages 22 people? Well, I think he's better at it than most. Is that the right answer? You know, he might be better at it than most, but if you look at how effective he really is when things get really hairy, and I wanted to come back and use that example then back to security in your thoughts, Eric and Dan, when things really hit the fan, when bad things happen in an organization, and what I'm referring to is if there's an incident or you're actually being attacked, right? And it's actively going on. When that hits the fan and you have to manage more than six people, can you effectively do that? But if you had six people underneath you and they're managing six people, do you believe that's more effective then?
You absolutely have to. So managing more than six people, no, it's not effective. I completely agree with that. And I do completely agree that it's based on a trust structure, that as a leader, you have given the tools, you've given the latitude, you've given everything that subsequent leaders under you need to make decisions and run with it. And then you've built trust up the chain that the right communication is going to filter down and come back up the chain. Now, I think this comes back into, I think we've had this conversation before, that I think a lot of people are better managers than they are leaders. And I think that's really what that comes into play, that a manager would say, well, no, I want all this power. I want to make all the decisions. Everything comes back to me. And a true leader goes, I don't have to make every decision, right? That the mission, the goals are understood throughout the organization or throughout the chain. And then you have leaders that have pockets of teams that are doing individual things.
And I think there's a distinction here between between trust or direct relationship and trust and accessibility. The communication path with the few that you trust, with that tier that you trust, and then the translation down throughout the organization is important. But I think it's equally important that you don't limit the accessibility to leaders to coming back up through that chain. I think it's really important that leaders setting the direction and vision be both visible and accessible beyond 6x6.
Right. No, that's a good point. And I would actually argue there's also a fine line there. You can be too accessible and too much of a part of what's actually going on, where you become a hover boss, right? I've seen this before where it hits the fan, something is being worked on, and I see one of the managers sitting over the shoulder of one of his team members. Well, did you try this? Did you do this? Did you do this? Well, that's not effective at all. Mm-hmm. That to me displays there's no trust, that I is the boss, that I have all of the answers. Therefore, I need to be sitting on your shoulder directing you as the subordinate to go and do whatever you did. That tells me that that's a failure in leadership right there in and of itself, that you don't trust that the team underneath you has the wherewithal, has the tools, has the ability to solve the issue without you hovering over them.
So I'm going to read this real quick. It's a quote that I just read the other day, and I really, really liked it. And what you guys were just talking about reminded me of that. It says, leadership is solving problems. The day soldiers stop bringing you their problems is the day you have stopped leading them.
I totally agree. Totally agree. And
100%.
And this is to bring this back to security. This is one of those cases where, that I think security organizations, back to the disservices we've done ourselves over the years, have been very secret squirrel, very closed, very, we can't tell you that. If I told you, I'd have to kill you kind of mindset. And that has encouraged people to not tell them. Or there's been dogmatic response. You asked me this. How dare you not know this, you fool? And these kinds of things are what get people to either take actions and not tell anybody, be embarrassed about the things they did, that they made a mistake, or if they have a question, they're not asking. And this, by being the kinds of leaders that encourage that kind of questioning, that kind of interaction, then what should I do? You know, you've become successful as a security leader when people really do believe that your door is open. that you have, that your organization, and I guess not just a leader, that is a security organization. You want people from the from outside, from the business, to be coming in and asking those questions. Hey, we think we saw this interesting thing. What do you think? Or what should we do about it? Or I was asked this question by a customer. Here's what I think the answer could be. Do you agree? And you're educating as you go. Education and awareness is a continuous thing. And being the kind of security organization that both informs about what's going on, not holds it as secret information,
right,
encourages people to come back.
I was going to say,
Go ahead, Brian.
I was going to say, I feel like I would have ended up in security earlier had the previous company I worked at been a little more open in telling us why we could or could not do things. Because I can clearly remember, so like when my president got this brand new MacBook, right? And I was like, oh, no way. When'd you get that? And he goes, oh, I just went out and grabbed it, you know, last weekend. I'm like, can me and John run out and grab one? You know, because we were the two directors and there was actually four of us that were directors. And he goes, yeah, he goes, just go ask. And there was a person there that he told us to go ask. And I did. And they said, no, you're not allowed to. And I was like, why not? And they're like, you have to pick from 1 through 3, you know? And I go, well, I know I can get number one. I go, but why can't I have this MacBook? And it was, no, you can't. I'm like, well, John has one, you know, the president. And they're like, well, we made a special exception for him. And the immediate feeling there was, I'm not important enough. Nobody ever explained that the reason we only have these threes to choose from is whatever, you know, endpoint tool we're using doesn't cover the Mac operating system. So we had to do something special for the president. And if we have to start doing that for everybody, it's going to get A, expensive, and B, really difficult to manage all this because we're not in a position to be able to do that. But that wasn't what was explained. It was just, no, you can't. No, you're not allowed. There was no reason of why. I'm like, come on. Like, have my friends have those at other companies, right? But I wouldn't have understood that maybe they had a different security posture, a different tool that they were using. And had it just been explained in such a way that I understood it, I probably wouldn't have been as pissed off as I was. But quote me on this. I was adamantly pissed off because I went back and I was like, you got to be kidding me. I bring in X amount of revenue and you're telling me I can't have this, right? That was the feeling, right? And then you begin to create the divide where now everything that happens, I feel that you're taking away from me.
Right. Hey, I was going to say, building on kind of what Dan, where Dan was going as well, taking it a step further. You know, I think one of the things that a security department's got to focus on, and I think Brian, this plays to what you're talking about as well, is having more of a servant culture. You know, there's still a lot of people out there that can't delineate between the different factions within IT, right? That whether you're help desk, infrastructure, security, a developer, or whatever it is, you're still IT. I still call you and you fix my computer. Okay, that's fine. Security teams, I think, are becoming, and a lot of organizations have become, some of the most forward-facing components of the overall IT team. So one of the focuses, I think, has to be, and this is what I focus on with my team, that if you get a request in that's not within our silo, doesn't matter. Let's solve it. Let's fix it. Because if you have that servant culture, then the next time there is an actual security issue, they're more likely to come back to you to solve that. And you want to create that openness. So Brian, like you're talking about, having that conversation and helping somebody understand it's not just, well, because he's the president, and leaving it at that. No, here's why. Now in that situation, I'm a huge advocate that there you probably shouldn't have any exceptions. Whatever happens at the top actually sets the norm of what should be allowed down further. But
I totally agree. The top should be held perhaps to an even higher standard as an example setter.
And that's also a really great point too. So he went and did that and he kind of did it on his own and said, well, make this work, right? But I can think of several examples. We can talk about these offline, but some of it had to go to whether it was expense reporting, right? Or going out and entertaining. And there was rules put in place that said, if you're out entertaining within the group, the highest managing person expenses it. You can't have someone that reports to you expense it, then you sign it. There's a conflict of interest there, right? And as soon as that rule was put into place, and that was put in place by, you know, a certain top management, the top management was all out. And I can clearly remember the story, and a certain somebody that I reported to said that when they were out and he was at, you know, top C level, and he said, the bill came and the president took it and handed it to someone else and said, go ahead and expense that. And he said, I turned and said, no, you have to expense that. He goes, no, that rule was for everybody else. And he said, absolutely not. That rule was put in place specifically for us. Right. And he handed it right back. Yeah, and I was like,
not an uncommon, that exact situation is not uncommon.
But the fact that he shared that story with me though, made, like, I took that as I need to make sure I'm doing the same thing. Meaning when I was out and had staff and everybody else with me, I was always the one picking up those bills. You know what I mean? Made sure that I was never handing it down, just from the simple fact that he told me the story and how he not only obliged by it, but he pushed for it to show the person that made the rule that we all have to follow the rule.
Absolutely. And now I'm going to build back on what Eric said and taking it yet even further, that the more that security teams and technology teams are helping to not just support the business, but drive the business, and then hopefully learning the business and identifying ways where security and technology can drive the business. Now, does this make Scottie Pippen into Michael Jordan? No. But it also doesn't mean that just Michael Jordan is making the business happen. Not just, here's a cool whiz-bang business idea, let's go do it. It's the collaborative nature, the
Detroit Pistons.
Sure. The Detroit
Pistons. Dan just cringed again. it gets down into that, in within every great thing that happens within a business, there's different types of people, right? You have your idea people, and then you've got nuts and bolts people. I'm boiling it down to just two types. There's obviously many more of that, but an idea person that if you just left them to themselves, they'll create great ideas. Nothing will be delivered because that's not what they do. That's not at their core, right? And then you have to pair them up with the nuts and bolts that, all right, I can take your vision, I can take your idea, and I can now break it down into the structures, what we have to build, the charts, the progress. Here are the gates that we have to go through to make that a reality. And the security team often, depending on the CISO that you have there, can play a role in that, right? You could have a CISO that is a great idea person. And I think COVID is an awesome example of this. You've got some security people out there, some CISOs that know the business better than some of the business leaders and can provide different direction and ideas of direction where the business should be going in these, you know, whether you want to call it a digital age, whatever it is, and being able to, I'm seeing lots of hand gestures out there. But the CISO is well poised and understands across the entire business on ideas that can be delivered. Or if you have a CISO that's a nuts and bolts type of person that can really help build that idea into fruition quite quickly.
But there is a place for both of those. There are organizations, there are business functions, there are verticals that need exactly the nuts and bolts CISO. Someone to come in, someone to take control, someone to technologize it and stay focused on that. If that is where your heart is, if that is the type of person you are and want to be, then go there. Right. Go be in those roles and enjoy them and do them awesome.
There's nothing wrong with that.
Absolutely not. And if you are, and if as you grow it, as you go into that role, you get through that and you think, hey, I want to do something a little differently, or you see a business that runs a little differently and you want to go try that. Go see how that fits with your style. But, you know, some self-awareness of who you are and what makes you tick. You know, I'm pretty loud about the fact that I'm a strategic person. I am a horrible project manager. And you know, and my technology has waned over the years, you know, due to too much time in Excel and PowerPoint. But you know, you be self-aware about the things you do well, the things you want to do, the things that drive you, and put yourself in situations where that's what's being asked. And if you find that those don't align or that they no longer align, then look for one that does. We're a field that needs people. We're a field that needs good leaders. We're a field that needs a variety of leaders. There's a place.
Yeah, I was going to kind of take this in a different direction. And those were awesome points, Dan. That is true. We are a field that needs people. And we are also a field, though, that is very willing to give back and build up. And if somebody listening to this wants to move into the security field, reach out. Any one of us, this community is amazing about taking people in. And I understand you don't have all of the technical jargon that we bring to the table, but just ask. We will tell you as much as we possibly can to help build people up. But I was going to kind of pivot to one of the comments that was made around CISOs complaining about budget. And as I was thinking about this, can any department within a business say, I have enough budget? Will anybody ever actually utter those words, right?
I can say them. I may not mean them, but I can say them.
Right. And that's exactly it, right? If you think about it, that money is not an infinite resource. Granted, I guess when you talk about governments and printing money, we could go down that route in the politics that be. But within the constructs of a business, money is finite, right? That if you're building a new building, that if your building is going to cost you 2x, 3x of what your revenue is on a per annum basis, maybe that's not a good choice. But the same thing happens within security. And having the understanding, having the wherewithal to understand where your spend fits into the overall aspects of the business, right? And we've talked about it before on here, on understanding your risk posture and what you're spending against. That if you're a small to medium business that's just making widgets that, you know, a China, a Russia, North Korea may not care about you, so your budget wouldn't encompass that. You're not going out building a SOC. You're not going out buying the best of breed tools. Maybe you're doing it in little verticals, little areas within security, but by and large, you have to have an understanding that budget has to match the business risk and that you can't outpace the money that the business is bringing in, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I was going to throw something out. I would agree there. And going back to the nuts and bolts comment, there's a line from, and I know I'm just like nonstop quoting movies and books, but there's a line from the movie Traitor that Jeff Daniels uses. And I can always remember it because at the time I didn't necessarily agree with it because it was an older movie and I was a little bit younger. And then when I got into business, I could absolutely see that it was true. And he was basically putting somebody in their place. And he said, there's our workhorses and our show horses. He goes, so go do your job. And he turns around and walks, you know, over the hill back into all the people sitting in their tuxedos, et cetera. And he was talking about how he was the show horse, right? And that there was this workhorse, right? And that there's a clear distinction between the two. And it stuck with me because I always in my head thought, yeah, that might be true. And I occasionally talk about that where I might say to somebody, he's just a show horse. And I'd be referring to somebody that I didn't think worked very hard, right? And then there was those people that worked very hard that put themselves into a position where they became the show horse and they could always relate to everyone that was still working hard and understood what they were doing. And he was much better at articulating why he had different needs or needed a different additional people or why he needed additional budget to the management because he was that workhorse before and now he is that show horse. So, and I think, and this is, how do we relate this, right? We just spent a lot of time talking about the role of a chief information security officer, right? We talked about what is his role, you know, in comparison to Scottie Pippen and Michael Jordan, or who does he report to, and gave many different variations of, or not variations, but examples of how that could be different at different organizations. But if you turn that back internal and say, who's the person in your household, right, that has the security posture? And this also pivots to a question I just asked some friends the other night, and I asked them specifically, so what do you guys value more, privacy or security? And the first answer out of two of them was, well, security. Because without security, you don't have privacy. And I was like,
I thought the answer was yes.
Yeah. Just like your children, I love you both the same.
And I thought it was a great question to throw out to him, because I know we had that kind of debate before. But if there's one person in the house, right, that has that, maybe the security mind, or has even thought about it. And here's the other thing. It was like the same with the organization that asked me the question, do you guys do training? But he was referring to training for the entire company to give them security awareness, right? And that's where I immediately pivoted to Wiser. But what is the role of security in the house? Is it first privacy for the family, or is it security making sure that, you know, your bank accounts aren't getting hacked, or your children are being, like, I think people have the first thing when they think of security is, well, I make sure that, you know, I stay at the bus stop when my kids get on the bus, or I drive them to school because I don't want anything bad to happen to them, right? Well, and this goes back to when we were talking about the ability for people to get into IoT devices or take over a camera, et cetera. What is that role, and who is that person in the house? You know, if the leader of security in the house is the 12-year-old, just because he's more tech savvy than his parents, is that a bad thing? If at least one person in the house has at least a little bit of security awareness to draw attention to it and be able to show, like, it's like me explaining to my dad real quick, like, hey, here's why you set up a guest network at your house. Here's why you just don't hand out your password to everybody that comes over because they need Wi-Fi right now, right? Here's where you set up all your IoT devices, right? Just to be a little bit more careful. The Wi-Fi password, I love that. So for those that are listening, Dan just held up a sign. It says the Wi-Fi password is, and you can actually write it on there. So it's like, you know, you're welcoming everybody into the house real quick. And it's so true. It's like you walk into a bar and the first question I used to ask is, hey, what's your guest Wi-Fi? You know, I need to get to work real quick, right? Who is that person in the family? And if there is somebody that's security-minded in the family, does the rest of the family like them?
No, trust me, they don't like me. I mean, not on that topic, at least. But do they listen? But do they? Well, you know, do you present it in a way, or does your 12-year-old son or daughter present it in a way that makes people understand that it's important? You know, there's a difference between bludgeoning people with it every day, patch, versus, you know, hey, here's what it means. Here's the so what. Back to the business impact of all this. You know, if you don't do this, you can get hacked. So what? So what's the real knock-on effect in terms that that person can understand, and that kind of communicativeness is the way you sell this stuff.
That's a good point, that every sales pitch has to have the so what, right? And has that has to be intrinsically built into the conversation on what does it actually mean? Because at the end of the day, if it doesn't mean anything, if there are no ramifications, then why do we care?
And that brings us back round to security as a communications function, as much as it is, and increasingly more than it is, a technical function. A relationship function and a communications function.
100%.
When you ask your children, like, so, you know, brushing your teeth, why do you brush your teeth? You know, why is it that we eat our fruits and vegetables? And I know my daughter, if she heard me just say that, she would be yelling, so I grew up big and tall, right? Like, I grew up big and strong because I eat my fruits and vegetables. And same thing, like, they're excited to brush their teeth. They went to the dentist and they learned what could happen when they don't brush their teeth, right? In that little mechanism, I learned what happened if I don't do this, right? And even at a young age, you know, children are very moldable in a way. They're a sponge. They soak up everything and they'll listen. And if it's explained in a manner that they understand it, it resonates, no matter, you know, whether it's a 3-year-old or a 12-year-old or a 16-year-old. And I'm sure everyone could probably say they have an example of a time when they opened something that they shouldn't have. You know, something came through on my phone, or I thought this was my friend sending me this message, right? People can be very easily targeted. And when you're able to show examples, like you said, and articulate that, it opens up a broader mindset. And now it throws some curiosity of, I didn't realize that, or this is all I have to do to prevent this. So
I'm going to close us out with something that was written by another CISO from Chicagoland, Eric Rudiak. He has a great blog about CISO things, and I'll post the link. And he makes he has a post called "The C Matters" or "How I Learned to Stop Worrying and Love the CISO Job." And in this, he talks about the fact that a CISO, somebody running a security organization, and I'd say this extends to everyone in the security organization that doesn't understand the business, is actually hindering and hurting the business that they're trying to serve. So to go back to being a subservient, being an order taker, a trusted order taker, doesn't necessarily solve the modern problem of security in business, security in an organization, in an academic institution, unless you are doing things that you know about the business you're trying to serve. You can't effectively serve, and you're actually hurting things.
I was listening, but at the same time, I was reading the message, Dan, that you had shot over. And when I pivoted to talking about people at home versus people just outside of security or business or things that they could do for their business, right? But I do agree in the sense that around the idea that the security mind, or just being not security aware, but understanding security as part of the business, how to drive business for success, and understanding the business and how security can help drive the business for even better success. I think it becomes even more and more relevant, especially here in the state of Michigan, when you talk about really large supply chains and some of the biggest businesses, right? And how, when you go down that vertical from largest enterprise now down to the smallest supplier who maybe only makes a nut or a bolt, and the idea that, you know, security awareness and having a security posture or not having it could affect the supply chain all the way up, right? And now it's becoming part of that conversation of, when we go out and look at your production control, your quality, et cetera, we're now also going to look at your security posture. So like you said, Dan, you may or may not win business because of your security posture. And if that's the case, then the Michael Jordan would be the security guy.
Great way to think about it. Wow, really great way to end this, Brian. I mean, just absolutely
tying everything together.
It's thought-provoking, and it brings it all together. So we're out of time for today, unfortunately. But thank you, Brian, Eric, always a pleasure. And we'll be back next time for another great security debate. GreatSecurityDebate.net is the website. Twitter at Security Debate, and feedback@greatsecuritydebate.net is our email address. We do want to hear your thoughts and feedback, so please do provide your feedback.